Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a destination. Part travel show, part current affairs, this show takes the opportunity to examine the nuances that help define a place by using the eyes, ears, and taste buds of farmers, chefs, journalists, and the like. This week I'm in Vietnam, and today I'm talking to Mark Lewison, culinary guide, about where he calls home, Hanoi. So hi, Mark. Welcome to Heritage. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Brianna. Nice to talk to you, too.
So based on your accent, pretty easy to tell you're not Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about your personal history and how you ended up as a food tour guide in Hanoi.
Well, I'm Australian by birth, grew up in Melbourne, and came over to Vietnam after having sold a cafe in Melbourne in the early 2000s, and was at a point in my life where I was contemplating my next career move, and came over here to have a break and to explore the food terrain a little bit, and loved it, and thought, how can I orchestrate a move to live here? And fortunately, I'm a teacher by profession, so that enabled me to get a foot, you know, like my foot in the door, and so I got a job teaching initially, and then managed an Australian aid project for 6 years, started writing the food blog as a kind of creative outlet about 10 years ago in 2005, and this business just evolved really naturally over a period of years out of people's interest in the blog. So it's kind of been an unplanned reinvention, but a really good one.
Worked out well for you.
Yeah, I eat for a living.
Well, let's dive into the food. What makes Hanoi cuisine distinct within the framework of Vietnamese cuisine as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the foundation of the cuisine is the same wherever you are in the country. Like, it's all rice and noodle based. The use of fish sauce is the main giver of flavour. Lots of fresh herbs right across the country. But probably the flavour, what the Vietnamese are trying to achieve with the flavour profile of the cuisine is like a balance between salty, which is generally coming from the fish sauce, sweet, which is coming from sugar or cane sugar, sour, which is coming from various things like citrus or vinegars, and then spicy, which is coming from the chilli. So that flavour balance will shift across the country a little bit. So in the south, for example, they like it to be sweeter. So your dipping sauces and your dipping sauces will be heavier on the sugar content. Even the pho broth will be sweeter in the south. In the north, it tends to be saltier, a little bit influenced by different climate as well. Like Hanoi is in a subtropical zone rather than tropical zone. So there's a few heavier dishes going on in the north. It's a little bit saltier, I guess, as well. But the foundation of the cuisine really doesn't change across the country very much.
From north to south.
From north to south.
And I think you touched on it a little bit. The one ingredient that Vietnamese cuisine couldn't do without, probably mm-hmm. fish sauce.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's in everything.
Yeah.
Almost. Very ubiquitous.
Yeah, very ubiquitous. I mean, it's used in the cooking process. It's used at the table. There's various grades of fish sauce, so you know, you might reserve a particular kind of fish sauce just for use at the table for...
Just as a condiment.
Just as a condiment, like as part of the dipping sauce or as part of a salad dressing. And then there might be a lower grade of fish sauce that you might reserve for cooking. And it's produced up and down the country in all of the coastal regions. And the best fish sauce, supposedly, is from a place called Phu Quoc, which is down in the south, an island off the south coast of
the
country.
Why is it the best?
I'm not sure. It's just in Vietnam, if something gets the reputation for being the best, everyone sort of takes that on board. But there's something about the quality of what they're doing down there that has gained that reputation. But you can get fish sauce that's produced in the Halong Bay region, or fish sauce that's produced in Mui Ne down closer to Saigon, Nha Trang also, which is south central coast. So all up and down the coast there's artisanal producers, and then there's big fish sauce manufacturers as well. It's their attitude to fish sauce is probably like a Mediterranean attitude to olive oil, in that you have different grades that are reserved for different usages.
And used all the time. Yeah. But the fish sauce from day to day, you know, is made in the home. Each home has their own version and they use it as they will, or do you buy...
No, people are buying fish sauce. I mean, they may be buying it from a small artisanal producer or somebody in the family who's producing it, but largely these days people are buying mostly commercially manufactured fish sauce.
So we just spent the afternoon walking all over the city, eating our way through the city. And I wanted to ask, kind of as we dive into more of the dishes, is the traditional Vietnamese meal structure the same as a Western meal structure? There's a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner?
Yeah, pretty much. Although, I mean, on the surface of it, it looks as if the Vietnamese are eating all day long. So there is kind of a culture of grazing across the course of the day. There's a lot of snacking in between meals. But traditionally, yeah, they've got their three main meals. Breakfast is something that's typically had en route to school or work rather than in the home.
What would I eat for breakfast? If a traditional...
Traditionally, it'd be some mixture of carbohydrates and protein, but most commonly things like noodle soup. So pho is the renowned noodle soup that everybody knows about. But there's a whole raft of noodle soups that... are available in Hanoi. Like you can get a duck noodle soup, or you can get a fish noodle soup, a crab noodle soup, a snail noodle soup. So you're not just restricted to pho. And then sticky rice is another common breakfast food.
Very filling.
Yeah, filling. It kind of gives you some carbs to give you some energy to get through to lunchtime. So, yeah, sticky rice will be combined with protein. Also, it might be something simpler with peanuts or mung beans or corn.
I've seen a lot of the grilled corn walking around.
Yeah.
Is that a seasonal thing?
Yeah.
It is. So right now in the fall, winter?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about, as far as from a family kind of perspective, is there a most important meal of the day?
Probably these days it would be dinner. And, yeah, it's the time when the people are all reconvening back at home after they've been at school or they've been at work. But traditionally, I think lunch and dinner had equal importance, particularly when Vietnam was more of an agricultural economy, when the majority of the population were undertaken work in the fields. So they would reconvene at lunchtime and then again for dinner. But what they're eating for lunch and dinner is actually very similar when they're eating in the home. It'll be a rice-based meal where there'll be two or three other dishes, some protein dishes and some vegetable dishes, and then typically a little bit of broth. And the broth could be something simple like just the liquid that the vegetables were boiled in, or it might be something a little bit more sophisticated. And the broth is generally eaten at the end of the meal to finish off the rice. But that's a fairly standard kind of home cooking scenario for lunch and dinner. But these days, they're not eating that so much at home for lunch.
And how about for you? Do you have, I know this is a hard question, but do you have a favorite dish or maybe something that you crave when you've been away for a while? You're a world traveler, so I know you get out a lot. Is there something that just is your absolute favorite?
I mean, it's pretty tough to choose in Vietnam. There's so much variation. I'm not the kind of person who would ever get sick of eating rice or noodles. So I mean, some people who are expats living in Asia, they get tired of that, but I never do. There's so much variation. But probably, I mean, in Hanoi, the signature lunch dish is, for me, it's called bún chả. And it's a noodle dish, but it's something that you kind of have to reconstruct yourself at the table. So you get this fantastic barbecued pork, which is the pork belly and also little pork patties. And the meat's generally marinated in a mixture of fish sauce and sugar and shallots and a few spices that will vary from vendor to vendor. And then that meat is then served in a dipping sauce, like a nuoc chấm. And the dipping sauce is fish sauce is the key ingredient. It'll be diluted with water. It'll have some sweet component to it and a sour component to it. And then you can add the chili at the table. and then you get a big old pile of salad and herbs and a big old pile of noodles on the side. And there's no real rules about how you eat that, but for me it's like, it's a dish that ranks up there in all of my culinary experiences anywhere in the world. It's fantastic.
Well, why do you think that, that being said, that dishes like pho and banh mi are kind of the most exported as far in the Western world of Vietnamese food?
Well, most of the food culture that's been exported from Vietnam is southern food culture because of the history of the country. They're the people who chose to leave the country or fled the country in the post-war period, so they exported their cuisine to the rest of the world. So in countries where there's large Vietnamese communities like the States and Australia, you'll be eating southern interpretation of Vietnamese food. So the banh mi is more of a central or southern sandwich dish, and even though pho is a northern dish originally, what you'll be eating in the States and in Australia is actually a southern interpretation of pho. So they're the dishes that have the most renown, I guess, and what most people are familiar with when they think about Vietnamese food.
Yeah, walking around Hanoi the last couple of days, I've not seen one banh mi offering.
No.
And when you say the difference between the North and South pho, what is the main difference?
Well, in the North, and pho supposedly originated in a province about 100 kilometres from Hanoi called Nam Dinh. And the northern version of pho is a very simple, pared-back version compared to the southern version. So in the north, you'll just get fresh pho or rice noodles. You'll get a fantastic broth. And then you'll get a scattering of herbs and onion that the vendor will put on themselves, the ladle of the broth at the end, and then at the table you have minimal ways of customizing with lime and chili. Whereas in the south it'll be this big production of tons of herbs on the side and bean sprouts and spring onions and quite a few sauces, including hoisin sauce on the table. So there's a lot more opportunity to customize the pho in the south. Northerners or Hanoians believe that's vulgar. They think they've taken a simple dish and turned it into something else.
I must say, the southern pho that you just described is exactly how I would describe what I've had in the U.S. And it is delicious, but I look forward to trying the northern version while I'm
here. Yeah, I mean, they're equally as good. I mean, I don't hold a bias either way.
They're just different.
They're just different, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back, since we were talking a little bit about history and kind of the evolution of food here. What cultures have influence Vietnamese cuisine the most, whether historically or in more recent kind of times?
Probably historically the influence is coming from the north, from China. So obviously the use of, you know, noodles and rice is originally from there. And then some of the preparations across the country, stir fries that are made in woks and fried rices and those kinds of dishes are definitely coming from that part of the world. And then in more recent history, in like the last 150 years, there's the French occupation. So, you know, in really obvious ways, the introduction of things like bread, coffee, certain kinds of dairy culture like yogurt, desserts like creme caramel, the introduction of vegetables like carrots and broccoli and cauliflower and beans, which were not eaten in Vietnam prior to the French.
What are some dishes where you see those ingredients in today?
The use of those vegetables is going to occur more in the home rather than at a street food level. So in a local restaurant setting or in the home, you might see stir fries that are made with those ingredients, cauliflower or broccoli or beans. Mm-hmm. Often they'll be flavoured with some kind of meat or fish sauce.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough for vegetarians to operate here because of, particularly strict vegetarians anyway, because of the use of fish sauce.
And what about snails? Mm-hmm. So all kinds of different snails all over the city today. A beautiful soup with the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that dish. And I was just wondering if the French had any influence on that.
Yeah, I've got my doubts about that. I mean, the French do like to take some credit for certain things, but I suspect that snails were eaten in China and eaten in Vietnam prior to the French occupation. So it's a noodle soup. Snails are something that have been eaten in this part of the world well before the French. Maybe the Vietnamese influenced them.
Maybe. Mm. And let's talk a little bit about the street food. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like you said, everyone's always grazing mm-hmm. from morning to noon to night. Mm-hmm. It changes throughout the arc of the day. But is there a hierarchy to street food here where you see the vendors who have who are walking around mm-hmm. and selling different fruits or different little prepared dishes? You mm-hmm. have the stalls that are kind of set up with a small seating area, and then you have a little bit of a bigger mm-hmm. area. Is there any hierarchy there, or it's just a hodgepodge of different offerings?
Yeah, I think it's hard to kind of pigeonhole street food under one definition. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite a broad term. There are people who are selling off the back of a bicycle or off a little cart, and they are mobile and they're walking the streets. And then, as you say, there are vendors who are operating out of their own home, but the food is being served or prepared on the street. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might be eaten in the front room of the home or on the street. So it's difficult to kind of categorise street food. It comes in all forms. And in terms of hierarchy, I suppose if you've got your own bricks and mortar, then you're more established. And whereas the women who are wandering around plying their trades from day to day, they probably have more of a hand-to-mouth existence. Okay. I mean, anybody who's cooking street food is not really doing it out of the love of what they do. It's just a source of income, and my guess is that if they could find a more lucrative source of income, then they would drop doing the street food.
If that's the case, do we see the tradition being continued by the next generation, or is it less and less as it goes on?
Well, I think it's less likely. I mean, because it's such an aspirational society, so the parents obviously have aspirations for their kids not to be serving noodles or serving food. They want them to be well-educated and working in professions, perhaps going overseas to study. And I mean, it'll be interesting to see what transpires from what's happening now to the next generation.
Great. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll be learning more about Hanoi with Mark Lewinson.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, this is Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, host of the Wild Game Domain, and you're listening to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz. You are listening to Native on Heritage Radio, and today I'm talking to Mark Lewinson, tour guide extraordinaire, all about Vietnamese culture and cuisine. So we've kind of left off where talking about the future a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of look at that with two lenses. One is gender roles and mm-hmm. the difference between men and women in food mm-hmm. in Vietnam. And then again, kind of just looking at what's changing in the city as far as from a commerce standpoint, really. So mm-hmm. I know we were walking around today and noticed men, it looked like they were having lunch mm-hmm. and less women or mm-hmm. very few women present. Mm-hmm. And you made a couple of interesting comments about, well, you know, the women are kind of running things around here. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could talk a little bit about those gender roles here.
You know, I think there's fairly clear divisions of labour when it comes to, or gender divisions, I guess, particularly in anything that's domestic related. So any culture that's related to food or domestic chores or cleaning is typically done by women here. So all of the market vendors, for example, anyone who's selling produce, it's very rare in Hanoi anyway to see men involved in that process. And if they are involved, they'll definitely be under the thumb of whoever the woman is in the situation. So sometimes it might be a retired man who is assisting his woman churn out some kind of street food dish or sell something. But it's really a man's world in Vietnam in a lot of ways. I mean, men have the freedom to go and drink coffee and go and drink tea and go and drink beer with their friends. And whereas the women are kind of driving the economy at a certain level, both in the home and also on the streets, they don't have time to be floating around drinking coffee and drinking beer.
And I want to talk a little bit about kind of how, you know, things are growing here. When I noticed on my way into town, there were, you know, cranes and mm-hmm. tractors and granite and marble shops. And mm-hmm. there was a park kind of coming towards north of Westlake, coming mm-hmm. south, that looked like almost like an industrial park area, where I feel like if I came back in 5 or 6 years, it would be completely built up. It was very clearly undergoing a lot of development. So yeah. What's the pace of that? What's being built? Mm-hmm. What's fueling it?
Mm-hmm. Well, the pace is rapid. Like, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if, you know, years ago when I first came to Hanoi, you would look across West Lake and the vista would be just lakeside level of dwellings that were 3 or 4 stories high, and there was nothing beyond that. But now you look across it and there's all of this medium rise apartment complexes and some very, very tall corporate buildings that are in that vista. And that's all happened in the time that I've been in Hanoi, so in the last 12, 13 years. So the progress in terms of construction and development has been very rapid, and I don't know, I think it's a common indice for countries that are moving from completely agrarian economies to more of a manufacturing sector or a professional sector. So there's less and less people who are deriving their income from agriculture these days, and there's a big population of people who are moving from rural areas into cities and suburbs, and they need dwellings and places to live.
And so what's mostly being built is homes?
Yeah, there's a lot of apartment buildings, but then there's also a lot of factories and industrial estates. So, you know, there is the potential for food security issues in the future because of the appropriation of land mm-hmm. for manufacturing means that there's less farming land, so those issues are sort of coming to the fore a little bit in the media.
Is it something that there's a concern for agriculture? Is there someone kind of bearing that cross, or is industry kind of toppling that?
Yeah, I think it's something that can't be stopped. I think people are seeking ways of less hardship in their day-to-day lives, and farming is a tough way to derive an income, and it's pretty much you're at the behest of all the elements, and you know, it's tough. It's a hand-to-mouth existence for most farmers, so they don't want their children to grow up in that kind of system.
Well, let's talk about some of those changes kind of on the street level. You, when we were walking around today, you mentioned that there was this kind of like buffet style of food mm-hmm. becoming more available. Mm-hmm. So some changes in the dining scene, that was like home cooking that you were saying being brought out of the home and onto the street.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tell me a little bit more about
that.
Yeah,
sure. Well, traditionally the Vietnamese, when it was an agrarian or agriculture society, they would be going back home to have their lunch. But these days, because of the change in the economy and the change in the workforce, people don't have the luxury of time to be able to do that. So there are these restaurants in cities in Vietnam called Com Binh Dinh, which means, well, loosely translated, means rice for the workers. And what they're trying to do is replicate home-style cooking. So there'll be cooking that happens out front of these restaurants over a couple of hours in the morning. So there'll be several protein dishes prepared and several vegetable dishes, and typically a soup as well. And so what happens is the people will seek these kind of restaurants out to have like a home-cooked lunch. And they will go in, they'll get a big plate of rice, and then they'll select whether they want some fish or some pork or some eggs, and then what kind of vegetable they want. and a little bit of soup, and it'll set them back $1.50 or $2. But yeah, it's kind of replicating home cooking.
Well, that sounds like it works out quite well for you in the line of work that you're in. So maybe you could tell me a little bit about your work involved in food tourism, mm-hmm. how you're seeing that change, how you're seeing tourists more interested, or mm-hmm. or are you? I mean, you seem to be quite busy mm-hmm. all the time with these yeah. tours. So you've been doing the tours for how long? You've been living in Hanoi for 13 years.
That's right.
And you've yeah. been doing the tours for...
We've been doing them for about 4.5 years. So it's myself and my partner too. And we it all really evolved out of a blog that I write.
Right.
So people's interest in the street food dining situation, they would email me. That's how it started initially, asking for tips and recommendations. And I... You know, it started to become kind of like a job in itself. Like, I was doing all of this correspondence with people who were preparing to come to Vietnam, and they wanted, you know, some information about where they could eat well. And so the penny dropped finally, and I thought, well, maybe there is a demand for some kind of, you know, tour to help people access the street food, because there can be a lot of barriers involved in sitting down in that kind of environment to eat. So, yeah, we started... We put a little badge on the blog and started doing it about 4.5 years ago. And about 2.5 years ago, I realized that the potential was really big, and we were knocking back so many people. So that's when I decided to quit my other work and devote myself entirely. So it's been full-time employment for both of us for the last sort of 2.5 years.
That's excellent. Mm. And in your experience as a tour guide, what are people most surprised about when they try Vietnamese food?
I think, well, most people, they're kind of aware of some of the exotica when they come here. So unfortunately what happens with a lot of press and publicity about Vietnamese food, when journalists come here and chefs come here and writers come here, they do tend to focus inordinately, I think, on the exotica in the cuisine. So things like the fact that dog meat is eaten here, and there's bugs that are eaten, and there's fertilized duck eggs, and there's all that kind of stuff in the cuisine. But in actual fact, it's a minor part, relatively minor part of the cuisine. So I suppose people are kind of shocked by some of that stuff, but they're equally enthusiastic about the range of really good, palatable and interesting stuff that can be eaten on the street. I mean, everyone's familiar with pho and banh mi, but in actual fact, on our tours, we don't do pho because it's just so easy for people to access. We want to show them different stuff, different dishes that they may not be able to find on their own.
And what, this is just a personal interest mm-hmm. to me, what's the most important food holiday in Vietnam?
It's probably the Lunar New Year, or Tet, which is the same as the Chinese New Year. So it occurs either from the middle of January to the middle of February, basically. And it's the time when the family reconvenes at the end of the year. So it's a little bit like our Christmas, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a family occasion. It's not like a New Year's Eve party that you would celebrate with your friends. It's where people eat. And probably the most important food item at that feast or festival would be the bang chung, which is like a sticky rice cake, which is eaten at that time of the year. And these days in Vietnam, you can eat it all year round, but traditionally that was something that was prepared overnight. So somebody had to tend the fire and look after the cake while it was cooking overnight. These days, of course, people are buying it. They're not necessarily
ready
made. They're not necessarily going through that whole process themselves. But that's a really key part of the table on that day. And then there'll be all sorts of traditional dishes, and that will vary across the country a little bit as well.
And what about? I almost forgot to ask this. All of this food, but what about what people are drinking?
In terms of alcohol, they're drinking beer. In fact, I think Vietnam is now ranked definitely the biggest beer drinking country in Southeast Asia. And I think it ranks up there in the world as well. But it's mainly the men who are drinking. Women drink very little in Vietnam. And the other alcohol is rice wine, which is a fairly, it can be crude and it can be refined. It's more like a liquor rather than a rice wine like a sake, for example. So you're looking at more of an alcohol percentage of vodka. It's taken in shots and it can be fairly brutal in terms of after effects or hangover the next day.
And what about, we were walking around and you pointed out a fermented beer, kind of like a short-lived, very fresh. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that is and how it's used.
Yeah, well, beer, that's called beer hoi, and it's a fresh draft beer, which is actually prepared in the breweries alongside the bottled beer and the other draft beers, but in a separate process. So it's a very fresh, light, watery beer, really good in the summer here. It's got a 24-hour shelf life, no preservatives, and
no pasteurization.
No, it's delivered in kegs. The beer houses that are serving it, they typically will be under ordering because they don't want to be holding over beer until the next day, so they want to run out. It's not a draft beer that's propelled by gas. It's actually just gravity that's propelling it out of the bottom of the keg.
Served with ice?
No, not with ice. But it will be, normally it's kind of placed in some kind of refrigerated cabinet, or it might be just simply packed in a whole lot of dry ice with lots of insulation wrapped around it to keep it cold.
And what about coffee and tea? We had like a lime tea, green tea, that was really refreshing.
Yeah.
Is that something that's pretty ubiquitous? And then I want to talk about coffee because it's growing and Vietnam has a huge coffee culture as well. So
Yeah. Well, the tea culture is probably the traditional culture, whereas the coffee was introduced by the French. And the tea culture, well, there's a few different things going on with tea. Tea is probably something that people would welcome guests to their home with, and it's a green tea, not a black tea. And it's also something that is sold on every patch of every street across the country. So you can sit down and have a cup of iced green tea in the summer. It'll be unsweetened. Or you can have a little shot of hot green tea in the winter. They tend to like their tea a little bit bitter, so they tend to let it stew so that the tannins become quite strong. And therefore, if it's bitter, it's medicinal and it's doing you good. Sometimes it'll be infused with things like lotus or chrysanthemum or jasmine.
Is that all seasonal?
Yeah. The lotus especially is a seasonal thing. And then there's another kind of green tea which you alluded to earlier with lime and sugar. That's more youth culture, so it's something that young people are drinking.
Oh, good. I want to make sure I'm hip when I'm in Hanoi. Okay. You're steering me in the right direction.
Yeah,
good.
Right. And whereas I feel like an old fart every time I sit in there.
And then just really quick before we wrap up, coffee. Mm-hmm. We had egg coffee, which is, how traditional is egg coffee? I know the family you said there's a few families who kind of do it here as their tradition, but how far back does that really go?
I mean, the history of that is not clear. And in fact, a lot of the food history here is not clear. It's kind of, because Vietnam's been through so much not just recently, but even before, but there's been a lot of hardship here, post-war period, and the priorities have obviously not been on the preservation of food culture and the preservation of the cuisine or stuff. But the egg coffee, I suspect, dates back to maybe the mid part of the 20th century. The family that I do know of that is famous for preparing the egg coffee, they established their business in 1947. It's something that only a handful of coffee shops are doing. So this family has three coffee shops, and then there's one other famous coffee house where you can get the egg coffee. So it's a generational thing that's handed from one generation to the next. But it's quite a complicated technique, and the mastery of that technique is something that most coffee shops are not going to bother with. I mean, introducing eggs into your range of ingredients in a coffee shop, there's obviously a risk associated with that, so you have to be very confident in the provenance of the egg and also in the mastery of the technique, because, I mean, as you know, it's got this most amazing kind of silky, velvety, texture about it, a little bit like a liquid tiramisu. So not any Tom, Dick and Harry can make that coffee.
Well, I've definitely have never had anything like it, and I think it's something that is special to this place. So
yeah.
Hopefully if anyone comes to Hanoi, they have to get an egg coffee.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And even the regular coffee culture here is really interesting as well, the use of condensed milk in coffee. So there's no fresh milk coffee in Vietnam unless you're going to a more Western style of coffee shop.
Well, we're about out of time. Mark, thank you so much for joining me today and showing me around your city. If you're ever in New York, I'll be happy to repay the favor.
Thanks, Brianna. Good to meet you.
And where can people find out more about you if they want to check out your work or hook up with you in Hanoi?
Yeah, they can check out my blog, which is called Sticky Rice. Or if you search Hanoi Street Food Tours, you'll find us in a Google search pretty easily.
All right, great. Well, that's all for Native this week. See you next week, same time, same place, live at 11 every Thursday right here on Heritage Radio. And in the meantime, you can learn more about my trip to Vietnam and other Asian adventures online at BKFAF or my website, briannakurtz.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.